Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Sports Urban Legend, along with my co-host, Macaulay Matthew. I am, of course, William Ramo. What's up, Mac? How you doing?
Hey, man. What's up? How's it going?
I'm doing good, man. Glad to have you on the show, as always.
Glad to be on, as usual.
Thank you. Thank you, man. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for checking out this episode. Of course, of Sports Urban Legend on today's show. Yeah, we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff here. You know, we're going to talk sports and entertainment and everything else. So, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, the Mets signing, a great reliever in Trevor May. He's going to definitely shore up that bullpen. And, you know, hopefully that's the first of many big moves for the Mets this offseason. You know, we'll preview the Jets and Giants, they play their games tomorrow, Jets versus Raiders, and of course, Giants are going to be battling the Seahawks. We'll get into that. We'll talk about, you know, the Knicks and the Nets, media day. Also talk about, the Saved by the Bell the reboot that just came out. Give you my thoughts on that. Me and Max's thoughts, of course. Also, tell you what's going on in The Mandalorian, the first six episodes so far in season two. And, end the talk with sports entertainment talk, you know, with a little wrestling, talk about Sting's debut in AEW, the War Game pay-per-view that's coming out tomorrow. The shocking ending to AEW and basically how it will impact even impact wrestling this Tuesday night. But most importantly, you know, you guys know the number is 563-999-3529. That's 563-999-3529. So feel free to talk about any of these topics or more. You know, we'd love to hear from you. With that said, let's talk about the baseball. And the Mets made a big splash. They signed the hurler from the Twins, Trevor May. Obviously, he's not the Trevor that the Mets fans were looking for. We're still hoping for Trevor Bauer to sign with the Mets, hopefully, this offseason. But this move that they made, Trevor May, I mean, this guy, he's improved, man, every year. He throws hard. I mean, this guy, he's a guy who wants to be here. He has that. He throw hard. He has the personality to be in, to perform in New York. Kind of reminds me of a Turk Wendell kind of player that, or John Franco that, the Mets had, 20 years ago, or even Billy Wagner, in 06. you know, a guy, a gutty, you know, gutsy guy who, you know, who's going to embrace, you know, the grand stage of New York. So, I mean, I think it's a great move, hopefully the first of many. And, I sign on with this, you know. You know, what's your thoughts?
I think it's a very good move for the Mets, because the Mets bullpen the last couple of years has been atrocious, mainly because of the closer.
Mm-hmm.
The closer hasn't been consistent. So this guy, you know, he throws hard, and he's last season looks like he had a 1-0 record with a 3.86 ERA, 38 strikeouts. You know, so you know he's a good bullpen guy. I think he's gonna give you some effective middle relief. So it's a good move, I think, for the Mets.
Absolutely.
I think now they need to focus on the starting pitching, though.
Mm-hmm.
Need starting pitching.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I know there's rumors that they're, you know, they're interested in Jake Odorizzi, who's May's Twins teammate. You know, they also have that relationship with the current Mets pitching coach, Jeremy Hefner, who was briefly a former Met several years ago. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why Trevor May signed with the Mets. He also credits Steve Cohen's eagerness to try to turn the Mets franchise around as one of the reasons why he signed. Trevor May, he's also like, you know, I think he has a podcast, and you know, he's into gaming, so you know, he definitely has the makeup and the personality to thrive in New York, you know, if he continues to pitch the way how he's been pitching,
yeah,
you know, for the Mets. So a very great sign, you know, George Springer and Trevor Bauer. And right now, I mean, it looks like the Mets are more interested in James McCann than they are in Realmuto. So as long as they could get one of those two guys as the catcher, you know, they'll be in good hands. So hopefully, you know, all of those guys will be under the Steve Cohen's Christmas tree, you know, at least by the, you know, a few weeks from now. This upcoming week is basically the winter, you know, when the winter meetings would have been on. Well, I guess technically it's there, but I guess it'll be, you know, remotely. So that's going to be interesting what's going to happen there. But there's there's news that Brian Cashman said that he wants Aaron Boone to be with the Yankees for 10 more years. You know,
that's a long time.
I know. Joe Girardi, Joe Torre, they've been around for like 10 years, so he wants you know, Boone to be around. I don't know about you, but I mean Aaron Boone is a good manager, but I think he's a slightly overrated, you know.
I knew you were going to say that.
I think Girardi and obviously Torrey is better than him.
I knew you were. For some reason, I knew you were going
to
say that. You called Cashman overrated over the years.
I've said that in the past. I mean, he has the biggest payroll. I mean, I have more respect, you know, over the years, you know.
Yeah.
But, my complaint, you know, I'd say about probably 20 years ago or so, you know, was that, you know, he had the biggest payroll. You know, all he had to do was just get the biggest payroll. But, you know,
that's
Yankees.
Not true. Here's why it's not true. I'll tell you why it's not true. Because...
Yeah, but that's why I agree with you. I thought that way like 20 years ago. But I agree. Now, they haven't been spending as much. I mean, obviously, they got Garrett Cole last year. But other than that, they haven't really been spending as much as they've been notoriously been known to do. So I see your point. But continue.
Because even if you have a high payroll, we've seen over the last several years with teams, you know, who have high payrolls, that even when you get these players, it means nothing until you actually have a strategy and you're able to win games. if you don't have a strategy to win games, there's no guarantee that you're going to win with the high-profile players.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen this.
Oh,
we've seen this with Dodgers. We've even seen this with your team. You know,
of course.
Be honest.
Yeah.
We've seen this over the years. You can sign as many high-profile players as you have. If you don't have a game plan and you're not managing correctly, you're not going to win. So managing, I think, plays a lot into it. You know, signing these players is one thing, but then you got to have a plan and a strategy. And I thought Girardi did a great job with the roster
great.
That he had. I mean, there was years where you know we weren't winning. You know, we had down years with Girardi where he didn't have a great roster, but he still managed to be successful. Especially that one year where entering the season, you didn't know what the Yankees were going to be, and they ended up going all the way to ALCS versus the Astros.
His final year.
Yeah, and you know, developing guys like Judge, Sanchez, you know, bring on Didi and some of these other guys who weren't like high profile names, you know, entering the season.
He should have never been fired.
Yeah, so you know, Girardi is great at that. Now, as for Boone, I don't know how you could call him overrated because you know he hasn't been managing for that long. You know, he's like what in his
probably
he's gonna
third
be
year,
fourth year, I think.
Yeah, I think probably this upcoming year would be his fourth.
This could be his fourth year, and you know he's still trying to like learn the managing thing. You know, he doesn't have much experience, but. From what he's had, what he's been given, he's done a great job. It's just injury after injury after injury. I mean, this team could be so much better than they are if they would just stay healthy. I mean, you have guys like Sanchez. Not only is he getting injured, but he's inconsistent now all of a sudden. And Judge, as much as I love Judge, he's inconsistent. He's not inconsistent, but injured, I should say. He can't stay healthy. Same thing goes for Giancarlo Stanton.
Mm.
You know, he can't stay healthy either. And now we're seeing guys like Torres, young guy who's getting injured now. So injuries the last several years have killed the Yankees. It's killed this team. I mean, who knows how far we could have gotten if we could have stayed healthy. But considering that, I think Boone has done a great job with all these injuries, especially last season. I mean, with a team with so many injuries last season, the way that he managed this team, I mean, he could have been manager in a year in my eyes, because I don't think any other manager would have been able to cope with that.
When you say last year, you mean 2019 or this
2019.
2019,
when they were, you know, we had guys going down left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the next man standing, you know, had to go up.
Trello, Luke Voit.
Yeah, like the whole roster was injured. And Boone still managed some of these B players that were coming up from the minors and had them play well. So call him overrated. I'm not going to say overrated. I mean, because, you know, he's trying to manage what he's been dealt, the hand that he's been dealt. And he's still not there yet. He's in his fourth season. So, you know, he's still trying to get a hang of this managing thing. But for what he's been given and the games, the success the Yankees have had the last several years, I'd say he's done a good job. I mean, it hasn't been great, no, because there have been some, you know, bad managing decisions I've seen in some games, some moves that, you know, could have, that I wouldn't have done, that he's done. But, you know, I think he's done good for what he's been given so far. But overrated, you know, I'd say that's a little bit strong, you know. But
what would you rate him then?
From 1 to 10?
Mm-hmm.
I'd give him 7.5 to 8. 7.5 to 8. You know, of course he's not no 10. He's not perfect. You know, I think Girardi was a better manager than Boone, of course.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, but Girardi had experience. You know, Girardi had, you know, he had experience with the Marlins.
Right.
With the Cubs.
Manager of the year, yep.
Yeah, manager of the year. Mm-hmm. So he came over here. So, you know, Boone, give him some time, you know. Give him some time to manage the team. Who knows? Maybe the Yankees go into the season and they play great and win the championship, you know. So
well, I mean,
it's a little bit too early to judge him.
obviously, but like you said, the Yankees, you know, they've been hit with the injury bug, you know,
yeah.
a lot these past couple of years. Yeah, but of course, I mean, Girardi, I mean, not Girardi, Boone is eventually going to win a title with them. I mean, he has a great relationship with, you know, with the management, especially Cashman. You know, the players love him. You know, the Yankees are always in the hunt for a championship, you know, if they could just stay healthy. So I mean he's bound to win a title. I mean there's no question about that.
Well that's if everything plays right, you know, that's if everything falls off, if all the cards fall into place. Because again, last year 2019 we were favored, heavily favored. And then mm-hmm. you had guys go down left and right, and then what happens, you know? So managers have no control over that. If the guys
well,
get
course,
injured,
yes.
you know, so
yeah.
but with what he was dealt especially last season, I think he could have been manager of the year, you know. So, but I'd say give him some time. You know, give him some time before we call him overrated. I mean, you know, let us see how he handles this team. You know, for the next several years, if he's still here, you know, in the next several years.
I think he will be. I mean, barring something unforeseen, he's definitely going to be there for several years to come. You know, I don't see a, you know, like a mutiny from the players to get rid of him, because he's a player manager, and you know, the front office love him. So,
yeah,
I mean, you know, that's a recipe for success. And, you know, Yankees are always willing to spend, you know, as evident as, you know, getting Garrett Cole, you know, in the, you know, last year. So, and of course, you know, they're going to try to re-sign LeMahieu, who rumored he's going to want at least a 5-year, $100 million contract. So, you know, the Yankees are going to spend money. You know, Yankees are always going to do what they got to do to give themselves the best chance to win. So,
who was it? Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Who was the manager for the Mets when the Mets went to the NLCS in 2006?
2006. That would be, of course, Willie Randolph.
Willie Randolph. Now, would you call Willie Randolph overrated for the job that he did with all the what he was given? Because I see kind of similarity between Randolph and Boone.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. Because I always thought Willie was.
I would not call Randolph overrated.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't have called him overrated.
I would say really, you know, he was a great players manager. You know, I thought he was a good manager, but you know, some in-game stuff, you know, I didn't agree with, but yeah, I thought he was a good manager. I thought he should have lasted a lot longer than he was. You know, before he got kicked out.
I think that was your last great manager. I think he's better than
Terry Collins.
I think he was better than Collins. call me crazy. You know?
I mean, I really like Willie when he was on the team. I never thought they should have fired him. Willie was definitely better than Jerry Manuel, who replaced him. And Jerry Manuel won Coach of the Year, I think, with the White Sox, like in the early 2000s. Might have been 2001 to be exact, maybe.
Yeah.
I thought he was better than him. Let me see who else replaced them. I mean, obviously Mickey. No, wait. Well, there was Terry Collins. I think it's a toss up between him and Terry, because I thought their in game strategies weren't the best. I mean, they were great player managers. I mean, obviously Terry Collins. I mean, he had everything. The Mets had everything good. Fall under Terry Collins, except winning a championship. They got the first no-hitter. They went to the World Series, had a bunch of All-Stars, had Cy Young Award winners. Trying to think. The Mets won their first batting title with, you know, Jose Reyes. So a lot of great things had happened under Terry's reign, you know, except for the title. Yeah, I mean, it's a toss-up, which one I think it's really close between Terry and Willie. Because, again, I thought they were both great player managers. In-game strategies always, I think they left something to be desired, you know.
Okay.
But, you know, I like both of them, you know, as guys and you know, as you know, how they carried themselves and how the players played for them.
Okay.
And then Mickey Callaway, oh my God, that's the Adam Gase
Mickey,
of baseball.
Well, man, don't even bring him up.
Oh, I have to. I have to bring up Adam Gase. There goes the segue. There goes the segue. Let's dive right into this guy. This guy finally admitted that, you know, he did not develop, you know, Darnold. And he was, this is the reason why they hired him, is because Peyton Manning endorsed him to the you know, Chris and Woody Johnson, you know, the Johnson brothers, you know, that he's going to be this great coach. When the Johnsons saw with their firsthand that this guy is a sub 500 coach. He was a subpar coach. If he was a golf coach, that would be great. But this guy, he was a horrible coach with the Dolphins. Every time he has star players, he always has beef with them, and then, you know, it just turns ugly. And then that's the same thing that would happen with him with the Jets. You know, Le'Veon Bell and letting all these people get traded. I mean, this guy, he's just, I mean, this coach, there's no reason why this guy should have been hired, much less be in the league. I mean, this guy, he's the worst NFL coach in the history of the game. Like, the Jets, I mean, the Jets have no shot. The only thing that they've been good at under Gase is that, you know, they're a shoo-in for the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. If Trevor Lawrence,
well, it's them in Jacksonville right now, it looks like.
Yeah, I know they're close. I mean, I know Jacksonville. I think Jacksonville only lost one game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they keep the Jets, man. They just keep losing games, man. I mean, I know this sounds weird, coming from a Jet fan, but can't we just win one game? I don't want the history. I would like to. I would just want to win one game, and then we still win the thing. Do we have to be Do we have to lose every single game? Like, come on. I don't want to be
good right now.
That part of history. I mean, come on. I just want to see the Jets win one game this year, and still, you know, and still win the number one pick. You know, I don't need to join the Browns and the Lions in infamy. Like, I mean, come on. It's embarrassing.
I know Gase, you know, he said he hasn't developed Darnold, but, I mean, all the blame is not on him for Darnold. I mean, some of the blame should be put on Darnold.
Oh, yeah, Darnold,
you know?
Too, right. But, yeah.
Darnold makes mistakes in the games, you know.
Oh, yeah.
He has to be smarter. I mean,
he does.
This is his third season right now, isn't it? Or second?
Yeah. This is like his third.
This should be his third, right? By now, he should be smarter, making, you know, this quarterback decisions, and it doesn't look like he's reading plays correctly or making good judgment out there. You know,
yeah,
making a lot of mistakes that he shouldn't be making in his third season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. Flacco gives him a better chance to win. That's why I don't think they should have been rushing Darnold back this year, because he's been injury prone this year. I mean, yes, obviously you want your star, or, you know, your quarterback with all this potential to you know, get acclimated and try to turn his season around, because this has been a lost season. But I mean, he's just being injury prone, and he hasn't been productive. I mean, it's just, they're forcing it. I mean, I understand they want to audition him to see, you know, before they have an opportunity to potentially get Trevor Lawrence. I get that. I get the thought process about that. But come on, you don't want to injure this guy. If you want to trade this guy, you know, you can't risk him getting hurt. Or if you want to continue to develop this guy and see what you have in him, you can't risk him getting hurt. You know, I mean, just got to do a better job. I mean, every game that they have, every week, every game that they have Adam Gase as the head coach, they're just, you know, they're just ensuring that he's going to get hurt, man. Because, I mean, this guy is stealing money. This guy is the Bernie Madoff of head coaches. Like, I mean, he's robbing them blind. And the Johnsons can't say nothing. Because they thought they were such geniuses because they listened to a guy, Peyton Manning, who basically dodged getting drafted by the Jets, but yet they listened to his advice to get this guy to get Gase because he's the quarterback whisperer. And I'm doing air quotation fingers times, even though I'm on the I'm on the air, but I mean, like, come on, like. Peyton Manning, I could have been the quarterback guru if I was coaching Peyton Manning. Stevie Wonder could have been. I mean, come on, like, I mean, he got hired because he conned them. And we're gonna have the worst record because of this.
I mean, it's not looking good for the Jets right now. You know, it's not looking good. They're playing against a Raiders team tomorrow who just lost to the Falcons and. They're looking for revenge right now. Well, not revenge, but, you know, redemption, I guess. They're going to try to win this game against the Jets, and they're going to try to win it big. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be pretty tomorrow.
Simply put, they're going to get run over by a car.
It's looking like it.
there's no relief. Not even the bye week. Because they had that game weeks ago that where they could have won. They could have won that game against the Patriots. That would have been the perfect game for them to win. You would have beat the Patriots, and then you would have had that week off. You could have just relaxed, and then they would have had some momentum, you know. But it's like they just keep finding ways to lose. Like, I mean, the only good thing about them losing is that it increases their chances of getting Trevor Lawrence. But, I don't want to go winless. Come on. Would you want, if you were in the Jets' shoes, you know, would you want the Giants to go winless just so you could have a chance at Trevor Lawrence?
No, of course I'd want them to win at least one game.
I know, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like,
I wouldn't want to go, you know, winless.
Embarrassing.
It'd be embarrassing.
Goodness. But shifting gears to the Giants, you know, the Giants obviously. They have a sub 500 record, but they're in the top of the league, you know.
Yeah, because the NFC East is so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Giants are leading the division right now and have a chance to make the playoffs with a 4-7 record.
Mm-hmm.
And they can make the playoffs. But they have a tough test tomorrow because Daniel Jones is out with a hamstring injury. So
Colt McCoy.
My other cousin, he's going to start tomorrow. And he played all right when Daniel Jones went out last week.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think he should play well. But the Seahawks, they're a very good team.
Of course.
The Russell Wilson and the crew, you know, they're going to look to, you know, beat up the Giants. But I think the Giants are going to give them a tough test. This might be a trap game for Seattle, I think. So I wouldn't be surprised if Giants pull off an upset in this game. I wouldn't be surprised. So it's going to be a good game. I'm not going to tell you who's going to win, but I say it's going to be a good game. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, the Giants have been on a roll. It's not going to be easy, you know, against, Wilson, but
yeah.
They do have some momentum. So we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah.
It's not going to be an easy game, a cakewalk, as we thought, prior to this second half of this season. So.
Yeah, and by the way, Wayne Gallman, who's done a great job since Devontae Freeman went out, you know, with an injury, he's been doing a good job at running back. You know, this guy, he's going to be a great backup for Saquon Barkley when he comes back next year. So we're going to have a 1-2 punch. Barkley and Gallman, you know, that's going to be fun to watch over the next, you know, some odd years.
Absolutely, man. But shifting gears, man. Yeah. Let's talk about the revival of a show. You know, one of our favorite shows of all time that we would never thought in a million years it would be revived. And of course, I'm talking about this iconic show, Saved by the Bell.
Oh yeah.
Yep, man. Like, you know, going into the, you know, finding out that they were gonna remake, you know, they were gonna reboot this show. You know, I was happy to find out, like, you know, like find out what happened to Zach and Kelly and Slater and, you know, Lisa and Screech, you know, the original cast. But, you know, then, you know, of course, you know, obviously finding out it was going to be, you know, a modern take, you know, I was cautiously optimistic, you know, because, obviously that, you know, the main characters wouldn't be the focal points, but, you know, as I found out more about the show, you know, it made sense, you know, it made sense that, you know, Jesse is a guidance counselor and a, you know, a doctor, and Slater, he's a football coach, you know, so they, you know, it made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and then when they originally, you know, said that, you know, Zach and Kelly and the other cast wasn't going to be there, you know, kind of was, you know, kind of uncertain because, you know, we, you know, if you're going to watch Saved by the Bell, you got to at least know what happened to Zach and Kelly. You know, they got to at least make an appearance. But, you know, fortunately for us, you know, Mark Paul Gosselaar and you know, Tiffany Thiessen, you know, they were able to make it work even though they had, you know, a busy schedule to cameos on the show. And, you know, before watching the show, I thought the show was going to be okay. But, you know, I have to say I was pleasantly surprised, you know, how good, you know, the show was and, you know, how well they integrated the new cast with the old cast. You know, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was an entertaining show to watch. You know, the only thing I have a little beef with is that theme song. I mean, they completely botched that new theme. I mean, I found out Lil Yachty is the one who raps it. And I don't like that remix, man. They need to get rid of it for next season.
Oh, my God. It's literally how, you know, if I was going to spoof, you know, the Saved by the Bell theme song, like, if we're going to make remake it, let's make it hip and cool and modern. Like, it literally sounded like an SNL sketch of how a modernized Saved by the Bell theme song would sound like. Like,
yeah.
To a T. Like, it's, I mean, that's literally the only thing I hate about the reboot of the show. But I mean, the only good thing about the song is like they're actually singing the old school song. But I mean, they could have done a lot better with who they. No offense to Lil Yachty or Yahtzee or whatever you want to call himself. You know, I'm sure there's, you know, some people who are fans of him. You know, they're yelling at their, you know, I don't know, their screen or their devices, you know, how to pronounce it correctly. It's really Yachty or something, you idiot. You know, whatever you guys are saying, but I mean, it's, to me, I mean, they could have did a better job with that, but,
yeah.
But, you know, other than that, you know, it was just a, you know, a great show, and my favorite episode was clearly the Todd Capsule episode where basically that was a old school Saved by the Bell centric episode. And you know how, you know, I guess this is spoilers. So, I mean, you guys should check out the show. So it basically shows, you know, the dynamic of, you know, the Saved by the Bell characters over the years. You know, I definitely think you guys should definitely check out the series, you know.
Yeah, it's a great show. Very diverse cast. It's a it's a woke, up to date Saved by the Bell. You know, you see that they integrate a lot of the modern stuff that we see today into the show. You know, the cell phone usage, TikTok, social media, and a lot of other stuff. You know, racial discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the stuff that you didn't see on the original Saved by the Bell.
Right.
But they do make references, you know, to some, you know, from back in the day, you know, the Zach's huge cell phone, you know, bringing back Max, you know, a lot of old school references as well. And
Mr. Dewey.
Yeah. So mixing in the old with the new, I thought that was great, you know, but, yeah, I like the diversity, you know, and even having a transgender person. And having Jamie Spano, who's the son of Jesse Spano, he plays a dumb jock. And apparently Lexi, the transgender, she has a crush on Jamie. And in the beginning, I thought she had a crush on, well, she kind of liked the brother.
I thought so too, the Avante. I thought that's what they were teasing at that. And then at that time, they were he liked Jamie,
right.
You know, Jesse's kid, right. Who I was, you know, I have to admit, I was bummed out that he wasn't Slater's kid, because he looks like Slater, he acts
like
Slater.
He's a dumb jock, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought he was, I was disappointed, you know, about that part, but especially when they were teasing, like, you know, how he, you know, Slater was, you know, he was involved with both of their mothers and stuff like that from the trailer. So they were like, they made a hint like that was his kid.
Right.
But, but to get back to the point, he was, you know, in love with Daisy's, you know, the main character's best friend, Aisha.
Right.
So he was like in a love triangle.
Which is still continued until next season.
Oh, yeah. Right.
We'll have to see. But him being a dumb jock, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he doesn't know Lexi has a penis. you know, he's kind of, he is dumb, according to Alicia.
Well, apparently he knows, because in that episode where they, you know, they tackled, Lexi's past, they show that she was friends with them, you know, before her transitional period.
So he forgot.
He's fully aware of, you know, what, you know, how she was, you know, before. So,
okay.
I mean, but, it was a real interesting show. Like, you know, the main character, Daisy, she's like a mix between all the original characters. You know, obviously she's modern day Jesse Spano, a feminist, a social justice warrior. She's, obviously she's like Slater, how Slater just, you know, Slater was an outsider, you know, of Latin descent, coming to Bayside and adjusting to the school. She's, you know, obviously like Zach, because she's she's the main character who has the timeout power. You know, and she's popular like Kelly. So, I mean, she's like a mixture of all the characters from the original cast, you know. And then it was also, another thing, back to my favorite episode, the Todd capsule, you know, they were basically, you were basically, it was basically like an Easter egg for the fans, because, the principal Todman, you know, Mr. Belding's successor, he basically was getting hyped that Zach and Kelly were going to come back, you know, to the school. And, you know, there was a student, he's like one of Lexi's sycophants, and, you know, he was like, his parents are come to the school. And then after, the principal just blurted out, like, nobody cares about your parents. We only care about, Zach and Kelly, which was a very funny line, because, you know, it was basically they were, you know, it was like an inside joke, like kind of mocking the OG fans for, you know, only caring about the original cast and not so much about the other characters. And then the even bigger twist, because obviously we thought he would care about Zack and Kelly storyline-wise, because, you know, Zack and Kelly are the is the governor and first lady of California, because Zach Morris won a bet. You know, he pranked California. He had to pay like a $75 parking ticket, but instead he won the bet and ended up winning, you know, the election to be the governor of California. So the reason why he was excited, Principal Tommen was excited to see them, was because he was secretly part of their classmate. And then it was funny how they retconned them and just like deep faked them into, you know, memorable scenes of, you know, Saved by the Bell, Kelly being, you know, offered drugs, and I'm trying to think, the wedding, you know, like other memorable scenes from the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he happened to be in the background, and then, you know, then they had the awesome cameo by Lisa, you know, basically revealing that it is true that Tommen was part of their classmates, but they never noticed them.
It's too funny.
Yep. So I would definitely highly recommend the series. You know, I thought, you know, I was cautiously optimistic. I thought it would be okay at best, to be honest with you, but it was really good. And another, one of the reasons why it was great is because, you know, they had a lot of the original people. Obviously, you know, Elizabeth Berkley, Lauren works behind the scenes, Mario Lopez. But they also have, like, you know, original people that worked, you know, on the set of the original to continue the continuity. And then they also had the guy who did the Zach Morris's trash videos for Funny or Die, do the videos. So he's one of the major writers of the show. So that is why, you know, that's another reason why the show is funny and, you know, it's very successful.
It's a great show. You know, it's a very good show, but it's not up there with, you know, Cobra Kai or Girl Meets World, but it's a nice show to watch. You know, it gives you an up to date of Saved by the Bell, and it's a woke Saved by the Bell, as these kids are saying.
Yep. And yeah, the guy's name is he's one of the directors, Dashiell Driscoll. So yeah, he's one of the people, you know, in charge of that. So I mean yeah, that's why the show's good, because, you know, they perfectly mix the Easter eggs and the throwback references from the shows for the people who love the show, like me and you, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people who's listening to the show right now, and then the people who, you know, who are you know, new to Saved by the Bell and this new cast. So mad props to them. And then shifting gears, you got The Mandalorian. I mean, my goodness, The Mandalorian, man. They've been, I mean, this show has been great. Like, they planted the seeds in season one. If you weren't into Star Wars, you could have watched season one and be like, okay, this is a nice sci-fi thing. You know, it's cool, original characters and all that stuff. But if you're, you know, like a diehard Star Wars fan like myself, man, it's like there's so many Easter eggs and references. And then this season two, man, it's like in Super Saiyan mode right here. Like, they're, you know, from the first episode, you know, they show him going back to Tatooine, where he met Cobb Vanth, who was a new character from that they had in the Aftermath books. He could have been an expanded universe character as well. I'm not sure, but you know, he like in the storyline, he was a guy who possessed it, Boba Fett's outfit after the events of Return of the Jedi, when, of course, we all thought Boba Fett, you know, was, you know, eaten alive by the Shalak creature, you know, there, you know, at that time. So, it was just great that how all the teasers led up to, you know, this past episode. And, you know, my fear was, just like episode two of the season, which was a huge letdown when, you know, basically the Mandalorian and Baby Yoda at the time, now known as Grogu, you know, they were babysitting, you know, the eggs. And let's just say Baby Yoda was not the person you'd want, not the species you want babysitting your baby egg. But it was, you know what I mean? Like, it was an okay episode. You know, if I was looking at it objectively, you know, I'd say it was an okay episode. But compared to all the other episodes in The Mandalorian, that episode was bad. You know, it was a boring episode, you know. And then from episode three on, it's been great. I mean, he reunited with, I'm trying to remember, Grief Karga and Cara Dune. Then, you know, the other episode, I think it was episode four, is when he met up with he met Bo-Katan, you know, the sister of what's her name again? Duchess Satine, the former ruler of Mandalore. And, you know, it was a good interaction to see how would, you know, the Mandalorian would interact with other Mandalorians who do not share his, you know, religious beliefs. You know, if you see the episode, you know what I'm talking about. Then episode five, you had Ahsoka, Rosario Dawson. You know, she hit it out of the park.
Great episode.
Oh man, great episode. Like, it's like after episode one, it was like, man, I can't wait for episode two. Like, they just keep getting better and better. Episode two was a letdown. Then episode three, you know, episode three on, where everything has been great. You know what I mean? And then it was like, man, okay, he met Bo-Katan. I mean, this is a great episode. Then, you know, he reunites with, you know, Grief Karga and Cara Dune. Then he meets Ahsoka. And then, you know, I was like, man, this is great. This is just great episodes back to back to back, man. And then I was afraid Friday night, I was afraid that we were going to have another filler episode like episode two. And man, once I saw that they were going to Tyron, the planet that was one of the earlier planets, if not the earliest planets of, you know, the Jedi Order, from a long, long time ago, even before they were called the Jedi Order. I think they were called, like, the Jedi or something like that. But anyway, like, once they show that planet, it was like, okay, they're going to – something serious is going to happen, because I thought this was going to happen in the last episode, episode eight of season two. And then when I saw the Slave One ship, I was like, oh, shoot, Boba's here.
It was on.
Once I saw that Slave One ship, man, I was like, oh, boy. This is what I wanted to see, man.
Yeah, man. The last couple of episodes were by far the best episodes of the season. You know, with Ahsoka and Boba Fett. I mean, you can't ask for anything better.
I know.
You can't ask for anything better. And to find out that Boba Fett and Jango Fett are Mandalorians now?
Yep.
And that just changes the whole dynamic and canon of the Star Wars franchise.
Exactly. Because, you know, there was the controversy started what was his name? Almac? I forgot. Prime Minister Almac. He was the Prime Minister of Mandalore. And he's the one that was saying, like, you know, he doesn't know. He told Obi-Wan, like, he doesn't know how they got the – how – how Jango had the armor, because he was saying like they're not real Mandalorians. And I guess it's kind of like, I guess it kind of foreshadowed what Obi-Wan said to Luke about Darth Vader not being Luke's, you know, hiding the fact that Darth Vader is not Anakin's father. I guess from a certain point of view, that, you know, what he thought was true, because I guess maybe because Jango Fett, you know, has a different belief system than he does, you know, I guess he didn't feel like he was a true Mandalorian, or maybe he was lying, you know, who knows. But I was very pleasantly surprised that, you know, Jango Fett and, you know, his son / clone Boba Fett are officially Mandalorians, you know, so, I mean, that was great. And then afterwards, man, you know, spoiler alerts, you know, I'm trying to remember the name of the other character. The Fen Sand or something? I forgot her name. But yeah, the bounty hunter, she was believed to be killed in season one. She's alive. She was saved by Boba Fett, as we all suspected by the rumors. And now they're working with Boba, with the Mandalorian, because, you know, unfortunately, Baby Yoda got captured. Grogu got captured. You know, side note, Ahsoka was the one that revealed his name in episode 5.
Yeah, not Goku from Dragon Ball Z.
Yep. Yeah, and she revealed that basically he was a Jedi, and he was rescued by somebody during, you know, Anakin's assault on the Jedi Temple, and, you know, in order, when Order 66 was enacted at the end of, you know, during Return of the Jedi, I mean, Revenge of the Sith, and the end of the Clone Wars season 7 episodes. So, yeah, now we're going to find out. Now we have two questions to find out. Who is the Jedi who saved Grogu from being, you know, killed? Who's the Jedi who's going to pop up most likely at the end of the season, when, you know, Grogu was, you know, calling out to a Jedi to assist on his, you know, his future journey. But, man. So, yeah, man, Moff Gideon, man, that guy is a bad dude. And it looks like he might be working with Thrawn.
I forgot to mention that Golf Median is wearing Darth Vader's armor.
Yeah, it does look like it.
Now, that's another question. What is he doing with that armor? Or was that armor somehow passed from him to Anakin?
Well, I'm assuming it just looks similar to Darth Vader's outfit. I don't think it's exactly Darth Vader's outfit. I mean, for all we know, he could have been trained by Darth Vader, because he's an Imperial person, you know. We don't know much about Grand Moff Gideon, I should say.
Maybe killed him and took it.
Who?
Darth Vader. Maybe he killed him and took it.
Killed who?
Midian.
No, remember Darth Vader died at the end of Return of the Jedi when he saved Luke.
No, but isn't this like during the time Anakin, when he was Anakin?
No. Mandalorian takes place five years after Return of the Jedi.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, Darth Vader is dead. This is basically what happened after, you know, the Rebel Alliance won. There's still Imperial remnants who, you know, they don't want to accept the fact that they lost. So, you know, they just want to continue to maintain power.
So then Midian, then he, maybe the armor was stolen from Vader, I guess, from Vader's dead body.
It's possible, because they have some, you know, occultists that, I forgot what they were called, the Acolytes of the Beyond, I think they were called. They basically stole his armor. Like, they're basically, those are the people, those same people that were worshiping Emperor Palpatine in episode 7.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's possible. I don't think it's Vader's actual suit, but it's possible, you know, since he was a high ranking, you know, Imperial, you know, member, he would have interactions with Vader and you know, the Emperor.
Mm.
Whether or not he knows if they're, you know, like if he trained with them or whatnot, it's possible because he does have the Darksaber. Which,
yeah,
that sword is, you know, if you guys watch, Clone Wars and Rebels, you'll know that that sword is very sacred to the Mandalorian. So basically how he has the sword, last time we saw it, you know, Bo-Katan had the sword, had that, the Darksaber. So we don't know how Gideon got it from Katan. You know, hopefully they'll you know, fill us in on what happened.
Also, I have a question. The foundlings, like Baby Yoda, like how long do they remain kids? I mean, the foundling, the Baby Yoda has been a kid since Anakin killed his foundling relatives.
Well, basically, you know, the foundlings, you know, for the Mandalorians are basically, they're basically any kid that they found, and they adopt them into, you know, into the Mandalorian culture. Like the Mandalorian himself, he's not born, you know, he wasn't born on Mandalore. You know, he was adopted into the Mandalorian culture by Death Watch, which was Bo-Katan's former group that she was in when she was, you know, when she was a heel. But basically, so anybody could be any species, you know, can be a Mandalorian, you know, as long as they accept the creed of the Mandalorian.
Why hasn't Baby Yoda aged?
That's a good question. Well, it must be his species why he can't age, because in Star Wars,
Yoda aged.
Yeah, over time.
Yeah.
Over time he aged, but we've only seen Yoda, you know, like probably like what 70 years of his life or so, 50, 70 years of his life, maybe. Let me do the math in my head. We've only seen him from like Phantom Menace to like, you know, Return of the Jedi. So that's like what, like a 40 year span out of the 900 years he has.
Wow.
And there's only been, you know, three well-known, you know, species of Yodas. You know, there's him, there's Yaddle, who was also a Jedi Master, you know, in Phantom Menace. No one knows what happened to her after Phantom Menace. In Legend, she got killed, you know, before the Clone Wars, but no one knows what happened to her in canon. And then, of course, now you have Grogu. So my theory is, and I'm pretty sure this is the more popular theory, is that he is the offspring of, he's their child. So who knows?
Yeah.
Because no one knows what species Yoda is. No one knows what planet he's from. You know, it's a huge mystery. So all in all, I mean, it's a phenomenal season so far. You know, I look forward to see what happens in these upcoming episodes. Then you got, you know, basketball. Looks like the, you know, the Knicks are, you know, the young guys, they're motivated.
Yeah, we'll see, you know, because Knicks weren't able to get any big star free agent right now.
Mm-hmm.
Westbrook was just traded to the
Wizards
for John Wall, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Knicks are pretty much going to have to go into the season with a bunch of young guys on the roster.
Mm-hmm. A lot of young guys with chip on their shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Keenan looks like he's trying to be serious for a change. You know, he's taking it serious, you know. But we'll see what happens, you know. Quickly, you know, Toppin, all these guys, they feel like they have something to prove. Even Mitchell Robinson, you know, they all look like the young, hungry guys that want to prove it. And then after, and then Austin Rivers, that's like the only guy that they you know, major guy. I mean, I guess you could put in parentheses, you know, major. I mean, he's a good player. He got potential. But, you know, his father, Doc Rivers, you know, the new 76ers head coach, you know, lobbied him to play in New York, you know, for his former team. Which, yeah, should be, you know, it should be interesting to see what Austin Rivers does, you know, in a Knick uniform, because he's going to be, you know, we're going to have like this real point guard battle. It's going to be him. You got Peyton, who has the, I say he has the edge. You got Quickly, who, you know, who has potential, who played well in college. And many people thought he got drafted like 20 or 30 picks ahead of, you know, what the Knicks, you know, got him. At the very minimum, they thought he was a early second round pick. So the Knicks drafting him, you know, late in the first round, you know, surprised people. But, you know, he has potential there. You know, you know, we're looking to see, you know, how the Knicks will develop. Oh, yeah, and then Melo basically, you know, shot down all the rumors of people thinking of him coming back. You know, he didn't see there was a fit for him to come to the Knicks. And if you remember, you know, listening to the episodes this offseason, that's what I was saying. Like, it didn't make sense to me for him to come back to New York. It's not like we're a championship team and he's a last piece of the puzzle and he finally gets to win the ring with us. That would be the only logical reason why he should come back, you know? But, you know, good luck to him in back in Portland.
Yeah. He'll be coming off the bench is what it looks like.
And, yeah, you know, he had to swallow his pride to, you know, come back, you know, to come back on the bench, you know, because he had a great, great career.
Yeah, he'll retire as a Blazer.
Yeah, sure looks like it. But, yeah, so, yeah, and then, the Westbrook trade, you know, yeah, I think that's definitely the guy that the Knicks should have went after, as long as they didn't give up anything of value. I mean, of major, but they ain't going to get a future Hall of Fame guy like that. You got to give up something. So what can you do? The Knicks just have to, you know, continue to draft wisely and you know, become a team that people would want to come to in a few years, because we all know Greek Freak, you know, I Giannis ain't coming here, so. Next year, so let's just get that out of the way. And then on the Nets side, you know everybody's anticipating, Kevin Durant making his Net debut. They recently signed, you know, his very good friend Jeff Green, you know, the veteran NBA player, to join the team. And yeah, who are you more interested to see this year? Are you interested to see Durant finally debut as a Net, or Toppin, you know?
Oh, I don't care about NBA the Nets. I'm more interested about seeing, you know, Toppin and some of these other guys improve.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what the Nets do, to be honest with you. You know, mm-hmm. They can win 50 games. I don't care. But I want to just focus on the Knicks and see what the Knicks can do. See if they improve and see if Thibodeau can develop these guys.
Yeah, I'm with you. Totally with you.
And see some winning basketball, man.
Yep. Yeah, and shifting gears, talk about winning. AEW, man, they revealed that basically Sting has joined them. He signed a multi-year deal he made his, you know, much anticipated debut on AEW, because there was always rumors, you know, after they, I think WWE released him, and like he, you know, the best fit for him would have been AEW, and sure enough, he's now part of AEW. And
wow,
yeah, he
that's a big signing.
Yeah, it is a huge signing, and it's a multi-year deal. Like less than 24 hours, that of his debut, his shirts got sold out, which is an AEW record right there.
But the question is, you know, does he still have anything in the tank?
Well, there's rumors that, you know, who knows, he might wrestle, he might not wrestle. But if he does wrestle, he's not going to take that many bumps, you know, which obviously, you know, he's 61 years old. You know, he can't.
Yeah, he's up there.
Yeah. Well, the reason why, you know, I fell out, you know, with him in WWE is because, you know, WWE didn't want to use him as a regular, you know, on-screen talent. Like TNA was using him, you know, TNA was using him like as a GM / wrestler, you know, at the end of his TNA career. But WWE, you know, they didn't do that. They, you know, they poorly used him. You know, he only had that big match with Triple H, which, you know, it was basically a WWE versus WCW propaganda match. And, you know, obviously it was a good match, but Triple H shouldn't have been the opponent, you know, that he faced at WrestleMania, especially if that was going to be his only WrestleMania match.
And plus, Sting got injured after that.
Yeah, I know. But, yeah, and the Seth Rollins match. But I'm saying the first WrestleMania match should have been against, you know, Undertaker instead of Triple H. Because Triple H versus Sting, you know, in my top 10 of wrestlers I'd love to see, you know, Sting wrestling in WWE, Triple H would have probably been number 11 for me, to be honest with you. Because there's like so many iconic guys in the past and even in the present that would have been interesting to see them, you know, see him fight. Because, I mean, he did fight Triple H already in WCW when Triple H was terrorizing, you know, back in those days. So I think the Triple H one should have been a rivalry that should have, had he stayed healthy, you know, should have been a rivalry that should have been, you know, visited after he fought against Undertaker, Kane, Bray Wyatt, you know, people who naturally now will never know. Yeah, he came to the aid of Cody Rhodes, Darby Allin, and Arn Anderson, you know, a guy he's very familiar with from their WCW days. And, you know, Taz's team, you know, FTW, they were beating up on the guys after the match, the aforementioned guys after the match. Oh, yeah, Goldust popped up too. I think he probably called Dustin Rhodes again. I don't think he uses the Goldust name again. But, yeah, so basically, yeah, Powerhouse Hobbs, Ricky Starks, and Brian Cage were attacking, you know, the aforementioned good guys after the match. And then that's when Sting popped the end to shock everybody. I don't know if you saw the video, but it had like this nice, you know, winter, you know, you had snowflakes coming, you know, falling into the arena. The fans were like really into it. Like,
wow.
It was the biggest pop in AEW history.
Wow.
And then the other big moment of the night was Jon Moxley defending his AEW title against Kenny Omega. And in Kenny Omega's corner, he had the Impact wrestler's executive in his corner, because they've been friends for a long time. So there was a little crossover there. And basically, at the end of the match, Don Callis, he hands Omega a mic, and basically, with the referee not looking, Omega hits Moxley in the face between the eyes with the microphone, which made him bloodied. And then he eventually hit his finisher, the one winged angel move to win the title and John Moxley's long reign, I'd say what a year reign of a title, and became the third ever champion in AEW history. And then right after the match, everybody was upset with Kenny Omega because of that screw job, and basically him and Palace, Impact Wrestling executive were running out of the arena, and basically the reporters can ask him why did he do this, and then the Callis said, if you want to find out the episode, you got to tune in Tuesday night at Impact Wrestling. So there's the crossover. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I didn't see it. I missed AEW, so I'm gonna have to watch the replay or see the highlights later on.
Yeah, but what's your thought that Impact Wrestling and AEW look like they have a partnership, that they're actually having a crossover?
Well, that's great for business. That's gonna give that's gonna be more competition for WWE now.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think WWE is too worried, because WWE still has more fans and still mm-hmm. makes more money to blow out anything that AEW can do or Impact
right.
Wrestling can do. But it's interesting because both of these organizations have, they've pretty much gotten like WWE has-beens
mm-hmm.
or WCW has-beens, and they're trading superstars back and forth. So it'll be interesting to see, how they make this a partnership work.
Yeah, and back to the rest of the event. You had MJF and Orange Cassidy. They won by eliminating Wardlow in the AEW Diamond Ring Battle Royale. Well, actually, yeah, it was a Battle Royale to determine who's gonna fight next week for the AEW Dynamite Diamond Ring. Basically, it was like a 20-man Royal Rumble. Basically, they had, but instead of having one winner, they had two, and those two winners, which is MJF and Orange Cassidy, they're gonna fight in a main event next week to determine who's gonna win the Diamond Ring, the AEW Diamond Ring. Chris Jericho and Jake Hager and Chris Jericho defeated Frankie Kazarian. This is the first time, other than last week, that these two wrestling veterans battled it out. And then you had Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. She defeated Layla Hirsch in a singles match. The aforementioned Darby Allin and Cody Rhodes, they defeated Team Taz, which had Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs. And then that's when, when the bad guys, Team Taz, were attacking the good guys. That's when Sting made his debut. And then they had the Kenny Omega defeating John Moxley match. But yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting, what's going to go down.
Yeah.
Now I'm interested to find out what happened, with Kenny Omega coming on Impact. But I was trying to find out, let me see if I'm going to check this out. And then the funny thing I found out was that I can't see Access TV. So it's pretty ironic that Access TV isn't accessible to everybody. So
can you get it online? I'm sure you can find it online somewhere.
Maybe, but I don't know. But what was I going to say? But yeah, it's interesting to see them working together. Triple H was saying WWE is open to working with other companies if it's profitable for them in the long run. But I strongly doubt that, because WWE, they don't need to work with anybody. They're making money.
True.
But tonight they got the War Games pay-per-view event, Speaking of former WCW, popular stuff from WCW, the War Games pay-per-view is going to happen. They have some, interesting matches coming up. They got, Timothy Thatcher. He's going to be fighting against Tommaso Ciampa. I think Tommaso Ciampa will win that bout, especially after Thatcher made Ciampa pass out on AEW. I'm not AEW, NXT. Then you got the strap match, Dexter Lumis versus Cameron Grimes. Dexter Lumis will win that. And then you got the triple threat match for the NXT North American Championship. You got the champion, the underdog, Leon Ruff, defending his title against Johnny Gargano and Damian Priest. I think Johnny Gargano will get that victory with the help of the two ghost face hingemans that he has working for him. Yeah, the same ghost face hingemans from the Scream movie. He has them working for him. Yeah. Then you got, to me, the match of the night. The Undisputed Era, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Roderick Strong, and Bobby Fish versus Pat McAfee, Pete Dunne, Danny Burch, and Only Larkin in the War Games match. Wow, I could see it going either way. This match, Undisputed Era has never lost so far. I mean, Undisputed Era has been dominating for years, but Pat McAfee's group, they've been attacking them badly. I mean, the Undisputed Era really does need this match to get this victory to get back on track. But I'm gonna pick Pat McAfee's group to upset them and keep the momentum going. And last but not least, you got the women's War Game match. You have Team Shotzi. You got Shotzi Blackheart, Ember Moon, Rhea Ripley, and Io Shirai, the NXT Women's Champion, versus Team Candice, which has Candice LeRae, who's Johnny Gargano's wife, Dakota Kai, and her henchman, Raquel Gonzalez, and Toni Storm, who turned heel last week or a few weeks ago. So I'm picking Team Shotzi to win that one. Let's see, what else? Yeah, I think that's about it. I think we covered everything I could think of. Is there anything you'd like to say?
No, just everyone just be safe out there and come back here. Let's come back and listen to Sports of a Legend. Only on Block Talk Radio every Saturdays at 11.
That's right. So, thank you again, ladies and gentlemen, for checking out this episode of Sports and a Legend. We'll be back hopefully next week, Saturday at 11. Check out my YouTube channel, Sports and a Legend TV. And we'll see you guys next time. So, he's Macaulay Matthew. I'm William Ramo. And I'll see you guys next week. Peace.